Hello, and welcome to show number 2504 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program empowering the visually impaired with expert advice, personal stories, and the latest in technology and accessibility. I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
Make your move no matter what your strength of play is.
And we'll be talking about chess today, where making your move is really something you need to do.
Over and over and over. Playing chess with vision loss? Well, why not? We'll talk with Glenn Crawford, Rita Crawford, and Marilyn Bland from the United States Blind Chess Association. They'll discuss the special equipment that's used, how to play correspondence games, and the challenges and rewards of the game, as well as other resources and outreach programs that they provide. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Rita Crawford.
The USPCA is a great way to meet new people, to open yourself up to new things, be around people maybe that share the same challenges that you do. I honestly, the tip of the week is look into the USPCA. I think that you will not be disappointed.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
Glidance, pioneers of Glide, an intelligent guide for the blind and low vision community. Glide's AI-powered technology guides you around obstacles, hazards, and more, providing audio and haptic feedback, getting you where you need to go safely and independently. More information is at glidance.io/eyes. That's glidance.io/EYES.
And by
InnoSearch AI, an accessible e-commerce tool for the blind. You can find your favorite electronics, groceries, or do some early holiday shopping at InnoSearch.ai, now partnered with over 500,000 retailers. That's InnoSearch.ai.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
Let's start by meeting our guests.
We have three guests with us today, and I thought we'd start off by having Glenn introduce himself. So, Glenn, tell us a little about yourself.
Hello, I'm Glenn Crawford. I'm Vice President of the United States Blind Chess Association, also known as USPCA. I've been involved with this organization since 2021 when I picked up playing chess again. I had played chess in the 1970s and 1980s, and I gave it up for quite a while. Then I discovered the USPCA, joined it, started playing again, got involved with the board of directors, and now I'm vice president.
Did you lose your vision somewhere in between giving up chess and picking it up again?
I was born with retinitis pigmentosa, and I was born legally blind. My vision was kind of stable through my childhood up until my teens. It was about 20/200, but then it slowly deteriorated until I was in my 50s. But when I played chess in the 1970s and 80s, I was able to play without adaptive equipment. I had some difficulty viewing the board and seeing the clock, but I could handle that. But then my vision really got bad, and I gave it up. When I discovered the USPCA, I had to learn to play chess not by sight, but by sense of touch.
And Rita, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Certainly. My name is Rita Crawford. I happen to be married to the vice president of the USPCA for 35 years. I worked at Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield for 43 years. I am not blind, but I became involved with the USPCA. I'm the director of public relations and outreach. So I do a lot of people things and reaching out and research whatever, you know, I might be needed for. But then I get the opportunity, and it's a real pleasure to interview people, chess players from all around the world. And I'm very lucky to have been involved with this. I'm very happy with my role.
And Our third guest is Marilyn. You want to tell us a little bit about yourself, Marilyn?
Yes, hello. My name is Marilyn Bland, and I'm in Dallas, Texas. I am the secretary of USBCA. I am also an executive board member of IBCA, which is the International Braille Chess Association, and the founder of Chess Queens. Now, Chess Queens is a group of chess for female players because we are in the minority, and it is a way to reach out to female players so that they know they also have a place in the chess community. I also pitch in with supporting Rita with the great outreach that she does. And so I do also a little bit of editing of our magazine and things like that.
And what is the state of your vision?
I used to be able to see light and dark, but it deteriorated. And by the time I was 20, I read my last print book.
Support for Eyes on Success comes from our listeners and corporate sponsors.
For more information about airing promotional items on the show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is chess, how it can be played with little or no vision, and the United States Blind Chess Association, which brings people together to do so.
Well, Glenn, I thought we could start off by talking a little bit about what the U.S. Blind Chess Association is and when it got started.
USBCA has been around since the 1960s. Its goal is to further chess among the blind and visual impaired community. We play chess in a couple of ways, by correspondence, email, and by over-the-board OTB, also virtual OTB play using platforms such as LightChess, Zoom, Skype, whatever people are happy with.
I assume as a blind or visually impaired person, you need some special equipment or special ways of playing chess. Tell us a little bit about that.
The board has 64 squares, light and dark. On an adaptive set, each square has a hole in the center, and all the dark squares are raised slightly above the white squares, so there's texture on the board, and you can feel it with your fingers and know where you want to go. The pieces have a peg or a dowel on the bottom, which fits into those holes, and the dark pieces have a small bump on top of each piece, and that lets the player know which is a black piece and which is a white piece. So you set the board up, put your pieces in the holes, and you're ready to play chess.
And then if you're playing remotely, every time one player makes a move, because the board is laid out as a grid, you can tell your opponent what piece you just moved from where and to where.
Absolutely. Yes, you verbalize your move. You use a algebraic notation, plus you use the specialized form of giving letters like A, Alpha, B, Bravo, C, Charlie, etc. That way there's no misunderstanding of which piece is moved where.
Oh, that's interesting. I was always familiar with the chess notation where you would say like pawn to king four or something like that. So it told which piece it was in front of and how far ahead on the board. Has that changed?
Yes, that is called descriptive notation, and the algebraic notation is now the way that we call and annotate moves.
Right. Algebraic notation is much more convenient. But if you have a name for each square and you have a letter for each piece, it's very easily conveyed. Your move can be summed up in just a few letters.
So maybe you can give us a quick overview of how this new system works.
Well, each square on the board has unique name. For example, the board, as you say, from the white side of the board, always from the white side of the board, the ranks are numbered from 1 to 8, with 8 being farthest from the white side. The files are lettered from A to H, A on the left side, H on the right. So the first square in the lower left is A1. The last square on the far right is H8. So each square is individually named. When you want to move a piece, you give the letter of the piece and you move it to that particular square. For example, if you have a knight on F4 and you want to move it to D5, you would verbalize it as knight to D5. If you write it down algebraically, you would write down your move, capital N, little d, 5.
Oh, clever.
So the lettering is R for rook, N for knight, B for bishop, Q for queen. And the reason you use N for knight is because you have to save the K for king.
The king certainly does need his own K, doesn't he?
Right. And then the pawns just have a letter, a small letter, you know. If you were moving your pawn from D2 to D4, all you have to write is D4 because it doesn't have a letter.
So we actually have one of those boards, and it's built with lots of contrast for low vision people. But as you said, it's very tactile in terms of feeling the squares up and down and the pieces and the little stick on top of each piece, you can tell white from black. So it's very creative.
I just would like to add that that is one kind of board. There are also magnetic boards which don't have holes in the squares and pegs. They have very strong magnets, and so you just would place your piece on the square that you want and it would stick.
Well, Glenn, you also talked about people corresponding to play chess. I've heard of that in the old days. People used to send postcards and the game would take a month. I suppose it happens a little differently these days. Can you tell us how that's done?
Yes, that's absolutely right. In fact, the United States Blind Chess Association used to be called the United States Braille Chess Association because until recent years, Braille was the way people communicated in playing chess. That's changed. So we have email today. Correspondence games are played by email, whereas each player would write up his email, get his heading on there, and start sending moves. He'd put move one, write in algebraic notation his move, and send that to his opponent. His opponent would receive that, write his move down next to it, send it back. As far as time control, we have days as time controls instead of minutes. So usually in a tournament chess game played by correspondence email, you would start out with 5 days. So you have 24 hours to make your move once you've received your opponent's move. If you make that move within that allotted time, you do not lose one of those 5 days. If you go beyond the 24 hours, you lose that day. So if you do that 5 times, you're out of days. The next time you miss moving your piece on time, you lose the game on time. That's how correspondence game, tournament-wise, with time.
Wow. So how long do these games take in real calendar days?
Typically, they'll last from a month to 2.5 months or even 3 months, because most players will send one or maybe two moves a day. Some players like to play faster, but the speed of the game depends on both players. The correspondence game is convenient for people who like to spend time studying the board or who don't really have the time to sit down for 2 or 3 or 4 hours and play a face-to-face game. So it has its advantages. The disadvantage is, yes, you spend a month, 2 or 3 months playing it, but correspondence games, you can have 3 or 4 or even 5 games going at once. So each day you might get 2 or 3 or 4 moves from different opponents.
So I take it there are quicker ways of doing chess these days, like people play bridge online. How is that done?
Well, there are various ways. You can play a live game, and this is done by connecting with your opponent on Skype. And so you one would create a link and the other would join. And if you're playing a friendly game, that's all you need. If you are playing a tournament game, you need an arbiter or a timekeeper. They call it a timekeeper. And the timekeeper's job is to keep track of the moves of the opponent and to manage the clock. If you're playing such a game, then beforehand you designate how much time each person will have. So some tournaments have a 90 minute per person per game plus a 30 second increment. And this means that for every move you make, you gain 30 seconds. So a game like that could easily run 3.5 or 4 hours long. Whoever's time runs out first, that person loses the game, even though they may be up on material. So you may have your opponent's queen and be ready to checkmate, but your time runs out, and so you will lose on time. Another way that we play other than Skype and correspondence is on LeChess. And this is a platform that allows you to log in and to create a game. And you can create a game to play with a friend or with just against the computer. And it allows you to set the parameters. So, for example, I want to play white and I want to play a 60-minute game with no increments, and I want this game to be rated. Or I want to play with a friend and we're going to play 90 minutes plus 30, and so I will send my opponent a challenge. They will accept it and we will play. LeChess will record the moves and the time. So you don't need a timekeeper here. You also don't talk to your opponent because the moves come up. If you're using a speech software, then your moves will be announced with your software. So you would hear what your opponent moves and you would hear what you type in as your move, and your opponent would hear the same thing on his end.
So that's pretty accessible then.
Yes.
I've also seen there are apps on iOS devices and presumably Android devices too for playing chess. Are any of those accessible if people want to just play with their phone?
Shredder Chess is an app that you can download that's adaptable for the visually impaired and blind. It would verbalize the moves. You would set up the board, choose your side, and the computer would play against you. You can set that up to where you can turn it off and come back to it later or just play straight through. But yes, there are many different apps that are out there for the blind and visually impaired so that they can play chess on their phones or on their computers.
And presumably you would set up a real board as you follow the game on the phone so you could actually feel the positions a little bit more easily.
Absolutely. You would need to move your pieces and your computer opponent's pieces.
I understand there's a set of special rules for people who are playing blind chess. How does blind chess differ from regular chess?
Well, in, let's call it chess for sighted players, there's the touch move. So if you touch a piece, you have to move that piece. The blind player has the opportunity to touch the board and the pieces, but the moment that piece is lifted off its square, then you have committed to move that piece. So, you know, you can touch all you like, but the moment you lift the piece, then you are committed.
So I have a question, Glenn. You said you used to be able to see when you were playing chess long ago, as I did. I had limited vision, and although I'd look closely at the board, at least I could see my position. These days, I don't see at all, as you don't see much at all either. And I'm wondering how you made that transition in terms of visualizing the board and if you have any tricks for dealing with that.
I don't know if I have tricks for dealing with playing tactile chess. It's interesting that when I could evaluate a position visually and do that in just a short time, 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, in order to make my move, when I got back into chess and had to learn to play by sense of touch, it took me a great deal of time to evaluate even the simplest positions because I was not used to playing chess by touching the pieces. So I had to learn to visualize in my head as much as possible the positions. And I've not been able to do that very well since I got to the tactile chess later in life. I had to learn to evaluate the position as quickly as possible in order to play the game. One reason why I don't play over the board chess is I've not learned to evaluate positions fast enough in order to keep pace with my opponent's time. So I stick to correspondence chess.
That seems to be my situation too. I have a hard time visualizing the board in my head. It seems to take me a long time to evaluate the positions, and it's kind of a disincentive to keep on playing. But I guess if you're playing this form of online chess where there's a lot of time between moves and time isn't a real constraint, that makes it a little bit easier to get into it. And as the members of your organization amply demonstrate, however, these transitions can be made and people can figure out ways of playing chess even if they can't see or have lost their vision.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about the United States Blind Chess Association, or USBCA, how to learn more about playing chess with a visual impairment, and how to contact them.
If people are interested in finding out more about chess and joining in your association, what advice would you give them?
Well, if they're interested in the United States Blind Chess Association, we can be found online. Our web address is usblindchess.org. That's usblindchess.org. We can also be contacted by sending an email to usblindchess@outlook.com. Anyone who's interested in joining, that person would simply need to send an email to usblindchess+subscribe@groups.io. That's US Blind Chess, the plus sign, subscribe@groups.io.
So Marilyn, you mentioned a group called the Chess Queens, which I think is a wonderful name because the queen is a very powerful piece on the chessboard. If people were interested in finding out more about that or joining that, how would they do that?
They can use the same information, or they could connect with me at TinkerbellTX, TinkerbellTX at hotmail.com. And so this is a way where we meet once a month, and I also have guest speakers. I have sometimes people who share their games. We have coaches who offer advice or walk you through games. And people share, you know, about chess in different parts of the world, how women experience it. It's open to kings as well, because without them, you know, there isn't a game without a king on the board. And it's helpful, I believe, that the kings have an insight into how it is in the world of the queens.
Let me say that these programs, Hands on Chess and Queens, can be found on our group's IO platform. If you are a member, you simply pick up the link that's sent out a few days before the program starts, and you follow it through Zoom.
Glenn, you mentioned an online chess site. that people could go to play online chess. Can you give the URL for that?
It's lichess.org. LICHESS.org.
And conveniently, there's a page on the U.S. Blind Chess Association's website that gives all the instructions for how you can play using that system.
Yes, I believe our webmaster has links to all of that.
Can you talk about some of the publications you produce?
What I do every Sunday, I put out a publication. I call it Sunday Smiles. Part of it is puns and jokes. And then I have a piece of history about chess. And then my last page are links to every single tournament and event that's going on. And you can just check what are the standings. The USBCA has a Saturday night chess tournament every Saturday night on Lee Chess called Golden Moves. It's a timed game thing. And then I feature who won that Sunday. I'll feature the top, or I just put a link to it. And then I do what's called a hands-on chess. It is a talk show the first Saturday of every month. I have been fortunate to have some very, very good speakers. I had the president of the IBCA, the International Blind Chess Association. I had Graham Burke, who wrote the Mammoth Book of Chess. But it's a way to bring the community together. The Challenger comes out every 3 months. I always feature a getting to know, and I'll pick a random chess player. And again, it's another way for you, as even though you're part of an organization, you get to meet the individuals, you get to talk to them, you get to read about them. Again, I want that camaraderie that sometimes it's hard when you have a large group and you're interacting through emails and things.
Well, that's nice, making it a community in addition to just being able to play the games.
Yes, ma'am, exactly.
That's great.
And if you check out the show notes for this episode, which is episode 2504, at www.eyesonsuccess.net, you'll find all of that information. And we've done lots of other shows about games. Just put the word games into the search field on our new revamped website. And let us know what you think of the website.
The current week's show is always displayed very close to the top of the homepage, so it's real easy to find, complete with links to the audio and the show notes. That's it for today's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about an interesting organization called First Aid for the Blind, which has innovative training programs designed to kickstart your progress to independence. The week-long remote sessions teach life-changing skills and provide vital tools to newly blind individuals, helping them quickly regain confidence and independence.
Checkmate for this show, and we hope you'll join us again for next week's episode.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening, and have a nice day.